Bloomberg Daybreak Europe, weekday mornings at 6 a.m. on London DAB Digital Radio and on demand via the Bloomberg Business app and BloombergRadio.com.
Andrew Bailey yesterday offered an insight into the disastrous September mini-budget. He gave testimony to the House of Lords Economic Affairs Committee in the afternoon, and he revealed the extent to which he and the Bank of England were left uninformed about the scale of the Kwarteng and Truss announcement. And he himself called it a most extraordinary process. So on the back of that, I'm pleased to say that we're joined this morning by George Bridges, who is chair of that Economic Affairs Committee in the Lords. He's also served in various government roles going back to John Major, also in the Department for Exiting the European Union, as well as a career outside of politics. Lord Bridges, welcome to the programme.
Hi, thanks for having me on. Very good to be here.
Great to have you with us. Look, it was a really extraordinary afternoon. The committee spoke one-on-one to Andrew Bailey. Bailey set out how the Conservative government really did blow up precedent. What do you think is going to stop that happening again?
Well, I have to say it was quite a jaw-dropping moment when he revealed that the Treasury official clearly didn't know what was going on in the Treasury itself. And it begs a question as to the functioning of basic procedure within government in the run-up to that mini budget. Your question's a very good one. Simply observing what is, in my view, the basic tenets of good practice and the process that should have taken place would ensure that that would stop that from happening again. In other words, a Treasury official goes to the Bank of England, to the MPC meeting, with an understanding of the outline, at the very least, of a package of measures that was going to be announced within that working week. I mean, I think to many of your listeners, they would say that that should be just blindingly obvious. There is obviously a second point here, which roiled the markets, as we all know, which is the lack of the OBR forecast.
Yes.
That is, and we'll come on to that. But all I would say is, as Mervyn King pointed out yesterday, the process that I've just outlined of the Treasury official being in these meetings with knowledge so that the MPC can make decisions on that basis, that existed before the OBR was brought into existence. So we shouldn't just pin everything on OBR forecast or no forecast. This is just basic stuff. And I have to say, it really does beg it, call into question just what was going on in Downing Street in the run-up to that mini budget. Now, I fully accept that there was pressure to set out to the market how what was going to happen. But that administration, the Truss administration, did have time to do come to an agreement amongst itself and the cabinet to do so. And I think that what will be seen is that they proceeded far too fast and clearly in a very haphazard and disorganised way, which led to what we heard about yesterday.
I know. And I think, I mean, you're right to underline just how unusual this is and that it's not just the OBR. The Treasury hasn't come back on this, but it's all of the institutions really were saved by markets. That is what sort of unraveled the mini budget. It was the pushback on markets that kind of avoided effectively, in some senses, financial ruin for the UK. It wasn't the Bank of England. It wasn't the OBR. It wasn't the Treasury. That is massively problematic, isn't it, for policy in the UK?
Well, I think that what's more problematic for policy in the UK is, A, following these basic tenets so that people make decisions on the basis of the full picture, not just part of the picture. In the case of a financial statement like that, you need to show how your sums add up. That clearly was a matter that bothered many people right across the world in terms of the markets. And finally, just in case, in the context of the UK itself, we have to show how we are going to make sure our financial stability is strengthened and not weakened. And that is the big mistake that Liz Truss and her administration fell into. That made me, I don't want to undermine.
But hang on a second. But I think it's really, isn't it also too easy to pin this on a short-lived Conservative administration under Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng? Because the MPs are effectively all the same. Yes, we have a new Prime Minister, but it is the same Conservative government. So again, the question is, you know, what have we learned? I mean, should the OBR forecast be a legal requirement, whether you call it a fiscal event, a mini budget, a full budget? Should that be the legal requirement in your view?
I wouldn't say that it's necessary to be a legal requirement, because I think it's shown that it is a necessity in and of itself. I don't see the reason to turn it into that. I just think that what we've seen here is that if you don't proceed with that level of clarity about how your plans add up and what the forecasts are, you will suffer the consequences. And that to me is...
But Lord Bridges, just to push you on this point, Liz Truss's acolytes are still within the administration, or at least they're within the backbenches. This may not be a one-off, and there must be a way, surely, there's an argument to codify some of this independence and institutional strength and firewalls in a way that reduces the risk of a repeat.
Well, I'm all in favour of the debate around this, but all I would say is that one can come up with codes and other things such as that. But actually, when it comes down to it, it's people observing what is just best practice. And I keep coming back to what we heard yesterday was a very, very simple point, that in the Treasury lead officials didn't know what was going to be being announced in its full scope within 24, 48 hours. Now, that is an extraordinary thing. And you can put up all these codes and everything else around that, around the OBR. But if you've got such a breakdown at the heart of government, no amount of codes are going to save you from that point.
So, I wonder how extraordinary it is, Lord Bridges, given the context and the denigration since 2016, pre-2016 and the Brexit vote, of those institutions. Everyone from Michael Gove dismissing experts all the way down to senior cabinet officials dismissing the OBR. Is it that surprising? Years and years of chipping away at UK institutions has led to this.
Well, I think that there are a number of... When you say this, we can talk about what you mean by this, but I think that I am very much on the side of the independence of the Bank of England, very much on the side of the strengthening our institutions so that officials can speak truth unto power, very much on the side of ensuring that you follow due process within government, and that includes making sure that the entire cabinet are consulted on enormous packages like this one was, and the cabinet wasn't consulted. All of these norms have actually, as you rightly say, they have been chipped away at. But I would say that we can put in place laws and all those kind of things, fine. But actually, it comes down to a culture. And here I would agree with you. We need to make sure that we restore the culture so we can strengthen our institutions. That is the way to do it. And actually, as you rightly said a moment ago, that is what the markets have told us, that what I have set out is the right way to proceed, because it gives not just politicians and the public, which is all important here, clarity about what the government is doing, but the markets clarity about what the government is doing. And essentially, we have learnt this lesson, or rather been told it again, the hard way.
Yeah. So in that case, let's look forward, shall we? Jeremy Hunt, the new Chancellor, his plans for fiscal consolidation. Are they credible, given that most of the consolidation and tightening, austerity, if you want to call it that, is going to be backloaded, potentially after the next general election? Is that simply too little?
Well, first point, I mean, they are credible in the sense that they've set them out. They, in terms of with an OBR forecast, they've mapped out a lot of the details around how they're going to achieve it. As you rightly say, there is the question mark over timescale. I don't doubt the government's resolve to see these plans through. And as you rightly say, a lot of the pain, especially on the core Conservative vote, which one shouldn't underestimate the difficult decisions that they've taken there, is going to be felt in the next two to three years. We're doing the tax part first and the spending part second, as you rightly say. Where I would agree with you, and we had an interesting debate on all this last night in the House of Lords after Andrew Bailey's appearance at my committee, where I would agree with you is we have extreme vulnerability still within the public finances to continued uncertainty and shocks. I think I'm right in saying that if the gas price goes back up to its August peak, that would add potentially $42 billion to public borrowing. We've all seen the sensitivities following the Truss Kwarteng mini budget of our public finances to rise in yields and what happens when the interest rate rises. So your question in terms of the resolve, I don't doubt. But the question I have is, how we would respond in the event that there is a further level of uncertainty that is beyond the government's control. And that is where my question really is. There are other issues that we can see, obviously, within the government's control, such as public sector pay. There is going to need to be a considerable amount of resolve on the government to ensure that public sector pay and other issues that may drive up public spending don't throw them off course. So I think there are pressures there. And the final point is that, as Andrew Bailey set out yesterday, there is still this issue that we have seen arising since COVID of around 600,000 people leaving the UK workforce. And the effect that that might have on participation rates, wages and the labour market overall is also something that we need to keep an eye on from that perspective. So I don't doubt the resolve. There are considerable uncertainties out.
And indeed, on that point, we're hearing from the Bank of England's chief economist, Hugh Peel, saying that Britain's exit from the EU may have cost the UK skilled workers and contributed to those staff shortages that are pushing up inflation. On the question of inflation, the Governor Bailey said that the expectation is there will be more to do on that front. What was your reading and your assessment of how far they're going to go in terms of rate hikes, given those inflationary dynamics, but also given the weakness and vulnerability within the building, within the housing sector, and higher mortgage rates?
Yeah, I mean, I was very interested. I'm glad you picked up on that point. I was very interested in that. And I'm not going to try and overinterpret what the governor said to my committee. I mean, I'm just noting also what Sir Dave Ramsden was saying last week, where, and I may be being unfair to Sir Dave, but he was seen to be questioning whether the consolidation of in the budget would enable interest rates to be significantly lower. And I think it was picking up on a number of points that we've been discussing. So, I mean, I'm watching with great interest what is going on. That's all I'm going to say on that.
Bloomberg Daybreak Europe, weekday mornings at 6 a.m. on London DAB Digital Radio and on demand via the Bloomberg Business app and BloombergRadio.com.